But we begin our program tonight with Chris Tensing. He's editor of Middle East Report, and a very unique and valuable piece of information that you can get published and online, and we'll hear more about how to get in touch with Middle East Report. But we're very happy to have Chris Tensing here this evening to talk about the protests, sometimes violence, which have spread across the world for a second week now in reaction to an online film trailer that mocks and insults Islam's holiest prophet, Muhammad. Demonstrations targeting U.S. embassies, consulates, Western governments, Western European governments, U.S. businesses. They've been organized in dozens of cities in more than 20 countries across the world. And last week, of course, our nation and much of the world had their attention focused on the death of the U.S. Libyan ambassador, Chris Stevens, and three other Americans working at the embassy who were killed in an attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya. But right now, I'm very happy to bring to the program Chris Tensing. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks very much, Scott.
So there is, I think as we begin, Chris, I might ask you to interpret for myself and the listeners the level of anger out there that we see, how it's been represented in our media in terms of, you know, how widespread is this anger. We've had thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of people gathered in protest, triggered by this this film, this disgusting film. But I wonder what it represents, because I will just say this before we get your answer, and that is, to many Americans, the apparent hatred of America expressed in these protests, you know, along with the violence, appear to be an irrational response to a crudely made film by an unknown amateur filmmaker with a felony record for bank fraud. It seems out of proportion to most people who are looking in on this.
Right. Well, I think there's a few points to make at the outset. The first thing to say is that these protests, as numerous as they have been and as widespread as they have been, were absolutely dwarfed by the pro-democracy uprisings that occurred across the Arab world beginning in December 2010 and going through 2011. Those were truly mass protests that brought out the full cross-section of Egyptian and Tunisian and Yemeni society. And these protests, by contrast, certainly they are vigorous, and the people participating are very passionate about what they're protesting, but they're in the thousands, whereas the demonstrations against dictatorship were in the millions. And these protests tend to be limited to, at the very least, ultra-conservative Islamists, if not radical Islamists, who have some pretty non-mainstream ideas about what their society should look like and what Islam is and what it represents in the life of an individual Muslim. So in that sense, these protests are not representative. I do think, however, that there is, well, there just simply is a disconnect between the Muslim world and the West in terms of issues of freedom of speech and where the red lines are, and whether it is possible to talk about religion and the holy scriptures of various religions and so on. And for the vast majority of Muslims, including those who are absolutely appalled by the violence that has attended these protests in some places and are even embarrassed by the fact of the protests, they still are offended by this stupid film, and they often do not understand why the U.S. government, for example, is not able to ban the film, has shown no interest in doing so. And there's a disconnect between our, you know, First Amendment absolutism, as far as it goes, and in even some European countries, which have stricter laws than we do about what can and cannot be said about sensitive topics. So, I do think that factor is there. But this film, we have to remember, it happens against a backdrop of decades of U.S. and, if you want to go back to the colonial period, Western policies, which have made it easy for radical Islamists of the stripe who are eagerly broadcasting this video in Egypt, for example, to rile people up, it makes it easy for these demagogues, which is what they are, to convince poorly educated people that that this film is of a piece with a campaign against Islam and Muslims and the Muslim world. And one can cite any number of policies, whether, you know, in very recent times, the drone strikes and other things associated with the war on terrorism. One can cite the Iraq War. One can cite the increasingly unstinting support of the U.S. for Israel, even as it gobbles up more and more Palestinian land that's supposed to be part of a Palestinian state. And one can cite also the longstanding U.S. support for the same dictators that those protests in the last year and a half overthrew. So it's, you know, because of these policies and because of this long history, it's unfortunately not easy, or not hard, I should say, for demagogues among the radical Islamist trend to propagate the message that this silly video is part of a war on Islam.
So that's very clear. There's more than just one issue here. In your opinion, how has the United States corporate media presented the protests in terms of some of this important context that you just discussed? Do Americans, by watching and reading American media, have a sense of that history that feeds into the demagogues, as you describe them, and how easy it is to tap that anger?
I think no, because I don't know what it is. Our media just has very short memories. I mean, it wasn't so long ago, you know, that in the wake of the September 11th attacks, that, you know, eventually we did get some fairly reasoned mainstream media coverage of this history, and the media did a decent job, not a fantastic job, but a decent job of reporting on the U.S. support for, say, Ben Ali in Tunisia and Mubarak in Egypt at the time of the Arab revolts. But yet I think we can look at a couple of quite prominent examples from the last week. There was an article in the New York Times about the U.S. position in the Middle East amidst all of these embassy riots, which did not see fit to mention much of the policy background that I mentioned. And then we've just had this Newsweek cover come out when the cover says Muslim Rage, and they recruited Ayaan Hirsi Ali, a notorious anti-Islam activist and propagandist, to write the cover story, and her husband Neil Ferguson also has a piece about how Obama is a pusillanimous appeaser of radical Muslims, and you know, so there's all of that context is quite missing, and instead there is a picture of these protesters and Muslims writ large as being irrational, Quran wielding fanatics, which of course, you know, that image is an old one in the Western imagination. Unfortunately, of course, there are some people in the region who embody that image, but for the vast majority of people are not like that, and it's sad on so many levels to see these same old racist and orientalist tropes keep coming up, and it's sad to see the radicals in the region doing all they can to reinforce them.
We're speaking tonight with Chris Tensing, editor at Middle East Report. The website for the publication, Chris, and all the resources you have there.
It's the Middle East Research and Information Project, or MERIP, which is merip.org, MERIP.org.
Okay, we'll repeat that towards the end of our conversation. One of the lingering questions about the unfortunate death of Chris Stevens, the ambassador to Libya at the Benghazi consulate, was whether this was the product of a spontaneous demonstration that got out of control in the violence that burned down the compound, or whether this was a deliberate attack that was planned in advance by groups affiliated or sympathetic with al-Qaeda.
Yeah, I don't have the answer to that question, and I'm not sure that anybody does at this stage. I think there's one interesting component to the story that doesn't get mentioned very often, and that is that Libya is in the wake of the fall of Gaddafi is not a strong state, and the state and its police apparatus and security apparatus doesn't have anything close to a monopoly on armed force. And so it appears that in the wake of the sort of initial gathering outside of the consulate in Libya, that there was some involvement of one of the local radical Islamist militias in organizing the protest, and the people who showed up to defend the consulate were not Libyan troops of any kind, but another militia. And so what may have happened, I mean, it's conceivable that there was a planned attack by al-Qaeda affiliates of some kind on the consulate, but it's also conceivable that there was basically a firefight between two rival militias, and that U.S. Embassy personnel were somehow caught up in that, and that was all taking place amidst these protests that were partly at least sparked by the film trailer. And there's another bit of context, too, which is that a couple of weeks ago, the U.S. Assassinated Sheikh al-Libi, the so-called number three of al-Qaeda, who was a Libyan by birth, and had connections to the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, which was the main radical Islamist group fighting Gaddafi in his era, and has subsequently splintered. But a lot of these militias have connections to that group, and through him to the broader global transnational Salafi trend, and so that also may be part of the picture here. It's hard to say, but in general, the way that these al-Qaeda affiliate types work is that they sort of operate in a larger current that one could call Salafi or radical Islamist, which most of the people even in that group are not themselves affiliated with al-Qaeda, but they sort of give them an environment in which to operate.
Chris, one of the subjects of speculation is who made this film and why. And there's a name of an individual, Nakula Basili, that's said to be a Coptic Christian. There's concern that there may be a backlash in Egypt against the minority Coptic Christian population there. And I'm wondering if you think, is this film trailer the product of a warped mind by a disturbed individual, or is there some other more nefarious political motivation? Was this in some way a deliberate provocation, politically motivated? And I'm wondering, if so, who would benefit from the rage and the violence that this film produced?
Yeah. Again, it's hard to say precisely, but from the sort of preliminary investigations that have been done by Laura Rosen and other investigative journalists, it does seem that there is sort of a nexus of sort of two groups in the United States that have, and I hesitate to call them groups, but maybe individuals with email lists who have collaborated to at least publicize this film, if not make it. And one group would be headed by a fellow named Maurice Sadek, who is a somewhat laughable, actually, figure in the Coptic American emigre community. He is regarded in Egypt with something between scorn and contempt by Egyptian Copts. They don't appreciate his advocacy on their behalf, which is full of wild exaggerations and full of lots of Islamophobia, and makes their lives worse, actually. And he has ties with this fellow that you mentioned, and he certainly promoted the film trailer on his own website. So he's one person, and another person is an American evangelical, right-wing evangelical by the name of Steve Klein. And then another person who has promoted the film is the notorious Quran-burning preacher in Florida, Terry Jones. And there are known ties between Sadek and Jones and Klein. And so seems to be part of what's going on. And then the casting call for this film, as I believe was discovered by a journalist at Gawker.com, of all places, who's actually done some pretty good investigative journalism on this story. The casting call was sponsored by a small company called Media for Christ, which, upon investigation, seems to be also run by a right-wing Coptic emigre who lives in California, and put up some of, and seems to have put up some of the money for this very amateurish and silly production. We don't even really know if there's a film. There's no report of a film actually being screened. All that is available is a trailer, and no one says that they've seen anything more than just this trailer. As far as why this would happen, I think a clue is in actually the first part of the trailer, which nobody talks about, which is a scene which is not set in the distant past, but is set in the modern era, and it's starts in what appears to be an Egyptian neighborhood, and there is somebody, there's a mob of bearded Islamists running down the street, and there's a respectable-looking Egyptian man who's wearing a white lab coat and seems to be a doctor or a pharmacist, and he later is revealed to be a Coptic Christian, and the bearded Islamists ransack his shop. He then goes home and is speaking with his wife and his daughter about how this could happen, and then that's the setup for this flashback to what is alleged to be the birth of Islam and the early exploits of the Prophet Muhammad and so on. So it's clear, I because of that bit of that clip at the beginning, which I think a lot of Americans would not know what that refers to, but it's, you know, that comes from the sort of fever swamps of the Coptic emigre community, where they are in league with these right-wing evangelicals in the States, for whom no insult of Islam is too over the top, and you know they're of course seeking to exploit the broader current of Islamophobia and distrust of Muslims that exists in this country, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to appeal simultaneously to the Islamophobia here, and they're hoping, I think, that the film will be played by their de facto counterparts in Egypt, these Salafi guys with TV shows, as a way to sort of generate the scenes, the tragic scenes that we have seen. And the idea is precisely to reinforce the narrative in everyone's mind, either in the West or in the Middle East, that there is some kind of clash of civilizations that is irreconcilable. There can only be one victor, either Christendom or Islam. And of course, this appeals to the worst elements on both sides of the divide, and empowers the demagogues and people with nasty agendas on both sides. And I you know, it's hard to avoid the conclusion that this film has that kind of incendiary, inflammatory purpose.
Thanks for that, Chris. Our guest tonight here on Counterpoint is Chris Tensing, editor at Middle East Report and working with the Middle East Research and Information Project. Chris, just a final question for you, and that would be when we have these extremist groups on both sides, the religious bigots, evangelical right-wingers who want to denigrate Islam, and those militant Islamic fundamentalists who want to exploit this kind of hateful film for their own purposes, how can the public at large, how can governments sort of thread their way through this minefield to, you know, reach some better understanding between peoples and avoid this this roadmap to the clash of civilizations?
Well, I think the Obama administration, in its response to the incidents at the consulate in Libya and the various embassies, has done a pretty good job. I think they've said what they should say, which is, you know, we condemn the attacks. Nothing justifies the attacks. However, we're disgusted by this film, and we wish it had never seen the light of day. Unfortunately, there's nothing we can do about it because of our First Amendment and our system, and that's the way it is. But I think what they have basically tried to answer bad speech with good speech, and I think that's really all they can do about that specific incident. Now, in terms of diffusing over the long haul, the anger and recriminations that allow these kind of things to burst forth, something structural needs to change in the relationship between the United States and the Middle East. The United States needs to adopt a more even-handed policy on any number of fronts, whether it's with regard to authoritarian Arab regimes or with regard to the Israeli-Palestinian question and the broader question of Palestine. Unfortunately, because these protests, which seem to be about outrage over silly things, whether it's this film or the Danish cartoon crisis of 2005 or the comments by the Pope in 2006 or any of these things that have caused these sort of outcroppings of outrage in the region, they tend to be talked about in clash of civilization terms. They get disconnected from politics, and so we don't really have a conversation that would, that would build support here in the United States for a radical rethinking of our policy. And I'm afraid I'm just not terribly optimistic about that happening. While I applaud the Obama administration for what they have said about the embassy incidents, I think that overall the Obama administration's Middle East policies have been pretty bad. Almost as bad on many fronts and worse on others as the Bush administration. So it's unfortunately not a pretty picture.
Well, just a last word, and you could probably make this brief. We don't have a lot of time, but what about Mitt Romney's response in alleging that the Obama administration were acting as apologists after this attack on the Libyan consulate?
That just doesn't deserve to be taken seriously or regarded with any respect at all. It was just such a transparent attempt to exploit the deaths of American diplomats for the sake of his flagging campaign. I think it was an act of some desperation on his part. I think they know that they're losing. There was that article in Politico the other day about sort of a pre-autopsy of their campaign. Based on leaks from within the campaign, lots of finger pointing. It was really a pretty grotesque display of the worst that our political system throws up.
Throws up is the right word, I think, there. Thank you so much, Chris, for spending time with us tonight and analyzing these very difficult issues. And one more time, if you would, leave our listeners with the website where people can get access
sure.
to the publication.
And I very much appreciate your plug, Scott. It's merip.org, merip.org.
All right. Worth checking out. A lot of perspectives on important issues affecting the region there. Thanks, Chris. We'll hope to talk to you again soon.
You bet. Take care.
Bye-bye. That's Chris Tensing, editor of Middle East Report.